Chairman of the Black Panther Party, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Chairman Bobby Seale. Give a shout out. Star Crew, Buddy Andrews, Music in the Back. Right on, power to the people. Don't stop the music. I'm an old jazz drummer, you know. In 1968, February the 17th, we packed the Oakland Auditorium. There are 6,750 seats in the Oakland Auditorium. We had standing room only. It was a Free Huey birthday rally. That was when Black Panther Party merged with SNCC, or rather Kwame Ture, then known as Stokely Carmichael, along with James Forman and Rap Brown, joined the Black Panther Party at that time. Actually, we had drafted Stokely some months earlier. I had given a press conference on the steps of the San Francisco Police Department, announced the fact that we hereby draft Stokely Carmichael into the Black Panther Party, not to fight for the imperialist war waged by the United States of America against the people in Vietnam, but the Vietnamese ain't never called us nigga. That was at a time when the government and the people were talking about drafting and putting Stokely in the army, and we wasn't drafting. Anyway, we was always doing something, you know. You know, the real founding of the Black Panther Party had a lot of little sequence of events that occurred. And I've never forgotten. Huey and I, we was always doing some kind of research. And we had been researching the history of blues music. And I was telling Huey that night, sitting out in front of my house, that if we went up to some of the record boutiques around the University of California, we'll find more blues records up there, because young white folks got interested in this authentic American music. Anyway, we went up there and wound up walking up and down Telegraph Avenue, April 1966. And Huey wanted me to recite my poem called Uncle Sammy Called Me Full of Lucifer. Actually, it's not my poem. Ronald Stone wrote the poem. I picked it up out of the Liberator magazine. I used to subscribe to about 25 or 30 different periodicals back in those days. In those early days before the party and during the early parts of the party, I had organized a rally preceding that at Merritt College. Packed the house, brought in all the different speakers and the musicians, what have you, etc. And at a 3-hour rally, Huey got there late. Huey was in night law school by this time, but he got there late at the tail end of this rally. And I recited this poem, Uncle Sammy Called Me Full of Lucifer. People said, well, why ain't we got protests today? Well, back then we had the draft, and at least you could get to an individual to say, I ain't gonna let myself be drafted. And that's what that poem was about. This poem actually leads and causes you and I to finally found the party. Now, we'd met at my house a couple of times right over there in North Oakland, trying to make notes about the new 10-point program. Just making notes and discussing things, you know. We really hadn't wrote the 10-point platform and program yet. And I was, we were walking up there, and Huey said, come on, recite your poem. Huey was trying to show one of my college buddies that I could speak and I could rap this poem, and it excited people and it could probably help organize people. I told him, man, I don't want to recite no poem up here with all these people walking up and down the street here. oh, come on, USA, come on, man. And finally he convinced me. So I stood out by the parking meter. I think we was near Haste somewhere, Haste and Telegraph. Hordes of people walking up down the street, both sides of the street. And we was out in front of a cafe. You know how sometimes those cafes have little tables out front. So I tell the site this poem, this anti-war poem, anti-Vietnam War poem. The first lines of the poem is Uncle Sammy called me for the Lucifer. Uncle Sammy called me for the Lucifer. But I don't give a good eagle eye, MacFlegel, triple whammy damn, for I, Billy Small Stick, will not serve. Suddenly a young, tall, bushy-headed white kid jumps up with a chair in his hand, walking out to where I was at. 10 or 12 people didn't stop and listen to me. And he's hollering, hauling, hauling, hauling. He's got a big, giant marijuana cigarette in one hand. He's got this chair in the other hand, and he comes out, sits the chair down, the little sidewalk cafe chair. He said, hey, man, I was looking at you, and people got in front of me, you know, and there's no vibes, man, and I need to see you, man. I said, okay, man, I'll stand on the chair. I get on the chair. 20 or 30 more people stop. And to my left, I could see at the intersection, we were right near the intersection, the police, Berkeley police car turned into the intersection. And I recited this poem. Uncle Sammy called me for the Lucifer. Well, I don't give a good eagle eye, MacFlegel, triple whammy damn, but I feel a spouse stick would not serve. Uncle Sammy, don't shuck and jab me. I'm hit the popcorn jazz changes you blow. You know damn well what I mean. You school my naive heart to sing red, white, and blue stars and stripes songs and to pledge eternally just to all things blue, true, blue eyes, blonde, blonde hair, white chalk, white skin, with USA tattooed all over. When my soul trusted in Uncle Sammy, loved Uncle Sammy, I died in dreams playing war for you, Uncle Sammy. No, I don't want to hear that crap. You jam your emasculate manhood symbol, puffed with gonorrhea. Gonorrhea of corrupt, unreal dimension to my ungreased nigga ghetto black ass and my Jewish, Catholic, Hindu, Islamic zoo. What? Sure, free public health penicillin cured me. But Uncle Sammy, if you want to stay a freak show strong man God, fuck your motherfucking self. I'm not, sir. Now, that poem, with the 50 people gathered there, it's hollering more, 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 more. And he was telling our student friend, you see, Bobby can organize, man. And anyway, I got off the chair. So some young white guy with a little crew cut, yellow t-shirt and jeans walks up, grabs my arm and says, you're under arrest. I say, man, get your fucking hands off of me. I mean, I did not know this guy was a cop. He's in civilian clothes. He says, you use obscene language. What are you talking about, man? Did you know that last year or so we had a free speech movement? We won in fucking court. We can say the four-letter word fuck, so fuck you. So, you're under arrest. I said, come on, Huey, man, let's go. Let's get the hell out of here. So we start walking. Took a couple of steps. A uniform cop waded through the audience, grabbed my jacket, which I spun around and came out of, simultaneously yellow t-shirt, tackles me, hits me in the stomach, knocks the wind out of me. We're rolling over, fighting on the ground. Two more undercovers get with him, they're kicking my ass. They described to me later what happened. Huey got jumped in front of the uniform cop saying, leave Bobby alone, he's done nothing. Leave him alone, he's done nothing. You know, back in those days, you could start a rally or at the drop of a hat. So Huey says, leave him alone, he's done nothing. Leave him alone, he's done nothing. So the crowd start hollering, leave him alone, he's done nothing. You know? So then the people across the street walk and stop and say, leave him alone, he's done nothing. And as the rally kept going and the cop kept kicking my ass, now these three of them, people were all up the next block hollering. They didn't even know what the hell had happened. Leave him alone, he's done nothing. Make a long story short, I wind up getting a loose and cutting yellow t-shirt in the hand with one of my little knives, my little scout knives. I had four or five scout knives in mine. See, I'm a carpenter, instructor repairman, high performance aircraft. I'm a machinist. You know, I did all kind of, I worked the engineering department in Kaiser Aerospace Electronics and Gemini Missile Program, so I always had these scout knives, you know. You know, some idiot wrote one time that Bobby Seale, one of the right-wing conservatives, took out his stiletto switchblade and cut this police officer. It was a 2.5-inch blade, and the scout knives, you know, and you put them, you got a corkscrew, you got an ice pick, you got a can opener, that kind of knife. Anyway, me and Huey went to jail, and we were both charged with assault police officers. Come October 10th, we finally was in front of Judge Stats down the Alameda County Courthouse. You know, I had to blow. You know, we did a no contest plea. We didn't have no lawyer. We didn't have no jury. You know, and so he said, if we do it, he said, we're probably going to get 1 to 10 years in jail. Because this time, Huey was in law school. You know, Huey had finished 2 years in law school by the time we created the Black Panther Party. And I blew. I said, Judge Stats, I work for the Department of Human Resources, City Government of Oakland. I have a statement to make. I just got Huey a job down there, a part-time job there while he's going to law school. And all I was doing was standing on the corner exercising my free speech, reciting a poem. And this cop, undercover cop who never showed a badge, jumped up, and that's how this whole thing happened. I have youth jobs programs. I've made youth jobs program in Richmond, California, all over the place. I says, and you're trying to, if you're talking about putting us in jail, you're trying to stop people from crime. I says, the stuff we're doing in the community is what's happening. We have 100 youth and so on. I blew it. So the judge gave us both 1 year probation rather than send us to prison for 1 to 10 years. We, as Huey had pointed out, we got 1 to 10 years. We got downstairs, I said, Huey, meet me in the Law and Poverty office tonight, because I work for the city government of Oakland. I had the keys to the joint. And we finished writing the 10-point platform and program in that Law and Poverty office tonight after everybody else was off work. You know, 1 point, we want full employment. Another point, we want decent housing, 50 shelter for human beings. Another point, we want decent education, talking about our true history. Another point, we want an end to the robbery and exploitation of our African-American communities. Another point, we want immediate end to police brutality and murder of black people. Another point, we wanted black men and women to have a right to fair trials, where you have some black folks or the damn Jews who represents the average region person in the African-American community, and so on. You know, Jag or Hulu, everybody call us hoodlums, call us thugs, they call us everything. They tried to stereotype us into something beyond that. As I told you, I was an engineer. He was in law school. But we summed that 10-point platform and program up simply with a paraphrasing of the first two paragraphs of the Declaration of Independence, United States of America. Melvin Newton is sitting there. He remembers this 10-point platform and program. But we came out to his house. He was living in University Village. Melvin Newton, he was his older brother here. And he helped us, you know, organize our thoughts and understanding about this 10-point program with our rough draft. And the summarization said, when in the course of human events it becomes necessary for any one people to dissolve the political bondage which have connected them with another and to assume the bowels of the earth, the separate and equal station in which the laws of nature, nature's God, entitle them a decent respect to the opinions of humankind, dictate that they should declare the causes which impel them, and as we wrote it, to dissolve that political bondage. When a long train, a choo-choo train, or any kind of train you can think of abuses and usurpations pursues and invariably evinces a design to reduce a people under absolute despotism, then it is the right of the people to alter, change that government, and provide new guards for their future security and happiness. So when we went out into the streets with the 10-point platform and program of the Black Panther Party, as a political organization, we would be a political organization. My hopes and dreams and my ideals, we was going to organize a national political organization, which ultimately we did do. But when we first went into the streets, we decided to work on point number 7. Point number 7, we wanted immediate end to police brutality and murder of black people. This was Huey's baby. From a legal standpoint, from a protest movement rights standpoint, from a First Amendment standpoint, the First Amendment gives all people the right to peacefully assemble and to peacefully redress their grievances. A mixture of that, we went out first, we trained our party members not to point guns, because Hugh would point out that if you point a loaded gun at a person, if it has a live round in the chamber, the California law, it constitutes assault with a deadly weapon. So you can't just point a weapon. The only time you can point a weapon that way is when and if you see somebody that's getting ready to do you bodily harm, so on. So we had a litany of laws that we knew about every gun. We taught the party members a 10-point platform and program. I mean, with my paycheck, I bought 25, 30 books, you know, copies of various books for our political education. It took us 2 months to get that nice little group together. By the second week of January, there we were, 14 of us, 7 in my old car and 7 in Huey's father's car. Walkie-talkies, tape recorder hanging around little Bobby Hutton's neck. Half of us had long guns, half of us had handguns. Down on 7th Street, walkie-talkie to Huey, I said, Huey. From my car to his car, Huey was driving the other car. I says, got a police down front. I'm pulling over. He pulled over. I says, yeah. He says, come on, let's everybody get out. We'll walk down. Got out of the car and walked down almost a block. Young man was standing with his hand on the back of the trunk of the car. Police car was kind of out in the street. As we walked down, it's a red light district in West Oak on 7th Street. Liquor store, bar, and a little grocery store. 20, 30 people standing there on the corner. So we walked down and we spread it out about 40 feet or so. The cop was sitting inside of his front passenger seat with the door open, writing something while his arrestee stood in the back. It must have been a traffic ticket or something. He hadn't even looked at us, or saw, looked up to see us when we first walked up. And as we walked up, an old man came out of the store, nighttime. What they got in their hands, sticks or something? Because somebody had long guns. Somebody said, man, them ain't no damn sticks, them goddamn guns, man, what's wrong with you? Somebody said, guns, I'm getting out of here. And he says, no, no one leave, everyone stay right here. We have the law on our side, we have a right to stand and observe. So Huey had turned away talking to the crowd. I'm standing halfway watching the police getting out of his car. Huey says, we're here to observe these policemen who've been brutalizing our people in the community. You have a right, just as we do, to stand and observe. And as Huey turned around, the cop says, you have no right to observe me. And you insist, no, something such as the California State Supreme Court ruling states that every citizen has the right to stand and observe a police officer carrying out his duty as long as they stand a reasonable distance away. A reasonable distance in that particular room was constituted as 8 to 10 feet. I'm standing approximately 20 feet from you and will observe you whether you like it or not. And some sister on the sidewalk in the crowd with her little drunk self, she said, well, go ahead on and can it, brother. You can it, brother. Cop says, that gun loaded. Huey said, well, I know it's loaded, that's good enough. Well, I have a right. Huey said, you have no right whatsoever. Huey dissertated off on some Supreme Court ruling somebody versus so-and-so, blah, 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 blah. Therefore, you cannot remove my property from it without due process of law. Step back, you cannot touch my weapon. And some brother on the sidewalk, he said, man, what kind of Negroes is these? A disciplined bunch of young people. Reading, understanding, pissed off for 101 and 1,001 different kind of reasons, including 29% of our black brothers dying on the front line in Vietnam. 29% of all the people dying on the front lines of Vietnam at the time. Is that gun loaded? The cop said. Huey jacked around the chariot. He says, like I said, if I know it's loaded, it's good enough. So step back. All the other brothers says, guys on the sidewalk say, oh shit, they start getting back. The cop got his arrestee, put him in the car, shut his doors. As he walked away, he stopped and looked at one of the party members, which is a sister. He couldn't believe one of them was a woman. And big, long, pretty earrings on, that afro. And this, she was there with Richard Aoki, giving her one of them big 44 Magnum pistols holstered down. Got in his car and drove off. Little kids come running around the corner. One kid went and got 9 or 10 other kids. See, I told you, look at them. These are the new black police in our community. It was a thing that had never been done. I always give this credit to Huey, particularly making sure we knew all the laws and all the particulars and all the specifics. You know, me, I was a different kind of organizer. You know, I wanted programs. I'm an architect. You know, I organized programs way before the Black Panther Party and after and in it. But we started that organization following the death of Martin Luther King. In a matter of a few months, we swelled our ranks well from 400 members up and down the West Coast to 5,000 members and 49 chapters and branches throughout the United States of America, all with free breakfast for children programs, all with free sickle cell anemia testing programs, all across the country. Some of the history you don't know, we got to teach young people this grassroots community organizing history, this methodology that we use. Really united people. It's one thing to call for black unity in the black community, but it's another thing to have some tangible program or some effort that's going on that people can plug into and show their unity by taking a stand one way or the other. And that's what we did. Yeah, we upset the politics in Oakland. We upset the politics all across this country one way, shape, fashion, or another. By the end of 1969, as chairman of the Black Panther Party, me and Huey had some 28 dead Black Panther Party members, 60 some out wounded, various shootouts, police department, working with FBI, the counterintelligence program literally, particularly in the year 69, made plans to literally attack our offices all across the United States of America with police departments. Right on up to the point of Fred Hampton and Mark Clark being killed December the 4th, 1969 in Chicago with a pre-dawn raid by the police operations there. 2 days later, 300 SWAT team police, 7 a.m. in the morning, cordoning off 4 or 5 square blocks around a two-story building that represented the Black Panther Party. A shootout ensued and erupted. 16 party members, 8 females, and 8 males inside this two-story building. It took 5 hours to get them out of there alive, because we did have a network system with people demanding that they let the people surrender. We did have certain support from people like the State Assemblyman Dineland, some of the others, some of the Congressional Black Caucus, beginning early Congressional Black Caucus, Congressman Dulles and others. We had a lot of other people, actors and others, that we called on in a network operation to get them to stop. And finally, the pressure got too great on Ronald Reagan and J. Edgar Hoover. And after 5 hours, they let the Black Panther Party members surrender. By the time they all went to court, the judge in the preliminary hearing threw it out of court. Told the police you had no business. He said, some cop up there testifying, we observed in the upstairs window what was known as a black male carrying and walking past the window with what appeared to be an AR-16 rifle, an automatic weapon. The judge says, what you got here is your evidence are semi-automatic. There's a bunch of Ku Klux Klan out there on the outskirts of Los Angeles in the woods with the same weapon. Why don't you go out there and arrest them and leave these Black Panthers alone? That set a whole tone in this country with those two attacks. Next thing you know, the mayor of Seattle, Washington, is telling the FBI to get out of town. We are not attacking the Black Panthers. And then they had made plans for 3 months to attack the NATO headquarters right here in Shattuck in Berkeley. And a young white policeman stole the goddamn plans and gave them to our lawyer, and we put it on the front page, outlining all the details of the truth of their attack and how they expect the 20 to be dead when they come into that office, shooting upstairs through the second floor and all that, three or four ambulances around the corner. These were plans outlined, laid out, literal evidence for an upcoming attack. All of this caused the United States Senate to investigate Senator Kennedy and Senator Church. Put the FBI on the spot for 10 days about their concerted attempt to move and smash the Black Panther Party. This was real, true, grassroots people's resistance. Now, we weren't the first people that resisted in the world, don't get me wrong, that's not my point. But for an overdeveloped high-tech social order that says we had constitutions supposed to have civil human rights that were being trampled upon, it was proper. It was necessary. It happened. And even though I had to cuss Judge Julius Hoffman out when they had me in jail for 2 years without bail, I'd cuss his ass out again if he violated my constitutional right, right in the courtroom. Let me say, this gathering is a forum reflecting on the birthday, the leadership, the effort and the struggle that Brother Huey contributed gallantly. When I say all power to the people, you go to my website that says cooperational humanism is nothing but an extension for that same thing. We're looking for a present, a future world of cooperational humanism. The struggle continues. Power to the people, thank you very much.